Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin out driving another great vehicle this week from our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
Yeah, this week we're featuring the 2015 Mustang. And this one has EcoBoost. It also has standard equipment, like the illuminated glove box. It also has a convertible top option available. And one of the other standard features that I thought was pretty cool was the tired mobility kit. So if you end up getting a flat in the trunk, you can actually pull this out. It'll seal the flat or get more air, whatever you need, whichever it is that you need. Maybe you just lost a little bit of air. It can fill it back up. Or if you have a puncture, it'll seal the puncture to get you to the Sunbury Motors quick lane to get it fixed. One of the other things you'll find on its standard is the individual tire pressure monitoring system. So, you know how some cars have that little icon that shows you the tire is low but doesn't tell you which one? Well, the Ford Mustang will actually tell you which one. It also comes standard with the backup camera, just to name a few things. Check it out at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. You can also see the magnetic 2015 Ford Mustang, magnetic in color, I should say, on my Facebook page and at Kevin Herr on Twitter.
All right. Well, let's bring in Charlie Campbell, WalterFootball.com, to talk about the NFL draft. Kevin asked me before the top of the hour whether I had Winston as a lock at one. I said, yes, 100%. What about you? I assume you have Winston locked in at one, Charlie.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It's Winston at one all the way. From speaking, you know, to people at the Bucs, they've been on to Winston from the very start of this process. And it really hasn't changed as they've gotten to get to know him. They've spent a lot of time with his family and went through a really extensive vetting process. So to me, there's really no wiggle room at all at number one at this point. Unless someone gives them the trade package of the century, the Bucs are going to take Winston at one.
All right, so now let's get to two. This is where the fun begins. So how much fun do you anticipate it to, if any?
Well, I think the Titans are going to take Marcus Mariota minus a trade. And speaking with sources there, they've continued to stay on to Mariota as their pick. They feel they have to get that quarterback situation right. A sixth-round pick just isn't enough to justify sticking with Zach Mettenberger. He was decent as a rookie, but this is a quarterback-driven league, and they have to get that position right for them to challenge the Colts. So I think they're going to go with Mariota, and they'll let those two guys battle it out, and if they both play well, then they'll have a nice tradable commodity in one of them. But I think the Titans will take Mariota minus being blown away with a great trade offer.
Yeah, what do you do now with Williams out of USC? If that's going to be the pattern, where does he fall? Because you have some wideouts and some teams up top that want wideouts.
Yeah, I think he's going to go in the top five. I know he's in play for the Jaguars and Raiders and Redskins. They're all considering him. The Jaguars, I think, are a bit more inclined to go with the edge rusher and Dante Fowler Jr. They lack an edge rusher, and they have some players for their defensive line, some interior guys. I think the Raiders are Williams' most likely destination. I think Oakland is looking to take him and then come back in the second round and get a receiver for Derek Carr. So to me, that looks like the plan for these teams in the top four. And then I think the Redskins would love to trade down, and they're hoping that Williams gets there in order to entice the team to move up.
All right, let me throw out a name that to me is an intriguing name. When I had to do the Pinstripe Bowl, one of the DVDs I watched was Clemson and Boston College, and I locked in on Vic Beasley. Give me an idea, Vic Beasley, and what his value is in this draft and a potential destination for him.
Well, you know, Vic Beasley, he's gotten a lot of hype. He had a great combine. But in speaking with teams, you know, he is going to be a situational pass rusher mm-hmm. in the beginning of his career because he is weak in run defense. And he played in college in the 220s and 230s.
Right.
And as a result, he wasn't an every down player as a sophomore and junior just because he was so undersized. As a senior, they had him out there and they kind of compensated for having a really undersized defensive end. With a tremendous D-line and linebacking core, and he's a great pass rusher, but he's bulked up since the end of the season. He's in the 240s, but he's still going to have to move to outside linebacker in the NFL, so he's in for an adjustment there. And I think initially in his career, he's just going to be a situational pass rusher until he develops his run defense skills and is able to be an every down outside linebacker as a run defender and pass rusher. But I think he still stands a very good chance of going in the back half of the top 10, maybe pick 5. But I think the Jets and Falcons, I think those are the teams that really are the ones that are keying in on Beasley, and he's going to go to one of those.
Jets fans would love to see Marcus Mariota there at 6. You feel strongly that at 2 he will be gone. What do the Jets do? What do the Jets do if that option is off the board?
Well, I know that general manager Mike McGann would love to move down and get more picks. That's kind of been his MO going back to his time with the Texans. That really is something he would like to have at his disposal. But I think that they'll look at an edge rusher there, like Beasley. I think a receiver will be in play for them. Amari Cooper, Kevin White will be worth consideration. And I think even Todd Gurley is a player that they might consider there because they could use a running back. And I think that also offensive tackle. They've shown a lot of interest in a lot of the offensive tackles. Eric Flowers from Miami, Andres Pete from Stanford. They really like those players. So I think if they were able to move down, that would increase the chances of them going with an offensive lineman.
Let's talk about the wideouts for a moment, White and Cooper. We know White turned in an incredible combine. We also know that if you give him a baton, he's going to run the anchor leg and take you home. Cooper obviously distinguished himself as an outstanding receiver at Alabama. So how do you view those two? If you get either one, are you a winner, or is there some risk in one as opposed to the other?
Well, I think it really depends on your scheme. I think if you're running a West Coast scheme and you want guys to get open quickly on off of a three-step drop, Cooper is really the player for you. He did that a lot at Alabama, and I think that White is more of a vertical player for a pro digit in vertical style offense to have on the outside. But I think Cooper has an advantage in terms of his route running and his polish. He's more NFL ready. And speaking with teams, it sounds like Cooper is rated ahead for the vast majority of teams I've spoken with. They have Cooper as their number one receiver, and I think that he's going to be the first one to go in the draft on Thursday night.
Well, if Al Davis were still alive, Charlie, he would probably look at White, and that would be his Cliff Branch Warren Wells.
It would be, but you also he would be pretty enamored with Philip Dorsett from Miami with that 4.240.
Yeah.
So I think Al would be itching to move back into the first round to try and get Dorsett to go with Kevin White.
Yeah, interesting. Let's get to the running backs. It would seem that in today's NFL, drafting a running back in round one, like Trent Richardson with Cleveland, becomes an eyebrow raiser in today's NFL. Where do you rate Gurley and Gordon, and what and are they in the old days? They're both first rounders. Are they today, and if so, with whom?
Yeah, they are today. They're just too talented to fall out of the first round. And Gurley's going in the top half of the first round. He won't make it into the 20s. And speaking with teams and my personal opinion, he's the best running back to enter the NFL since Adrian Peterson. And if he didn't have the knee injury, he would be going third overall mm-hmm. to the Jags. But with the knee, that's going to bump him down a little bit. But I still expect him to go in the top 10 or top 16. And I don't think that he's going to have any problems as a pro. As long as he can stay healthy, he's going to be a dynamite running back. And I think Gordon is going to go most likely in the top 25. I think if he slips out of the top 25, he won't last long between the rim 30. So he's definitely worth toughness. He's really a developing back. I think his football is his best football is ahead of him. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if he does go in the top 20 because in that range of the middle teens to late teens, there are a few teams that could take a running back, and he might be the best talent available.
Eagles at 20, Steelers at 22. What would your projection on this day be?
Well, right now I'm going to have the Eagles going with a wide receiver. And looking ahead to my final mock draft, I'm probably going to be sticking with Nelson Aguilar from California. I just think he's a really nice scheme fit for Chip Kelly. He's polished entering this level, and I think that he's going to be a player that can step in and make up for Jeremy Maclin leaving in free agency. And with the Steelers, I have them right now going with Randy Gregory, the Nebraska pass rusher. They've shown interest in him. They've had him in for visits. I think that obviously the Steelers have to improve their edge rushing. He's, without the off-the-field issues, he's the best edge rusher in this draft class, the best pass rusher, period. The off-the-field issues bump him down. I think the Steelers have shown that they're very happy to just sit where they're slot is and wait for a really good talent to fall to them, and I think that could be the case with Gregory, and they'll just have Mike Tomlin and James Harrison and other vets take Gregory under their wing and try and make sure that he figures out how to be a pro, in which case the Steelers are coming away with a dynamite pass rusher. And given the age of Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers have a Super Bowl window that's going to close in a few years. So I think this pick really has to be a player to help them achieve that championship goal. It can't be really a long-term pick. It's a short-term pick in terms of we need to win now before Big Ben is done, and I think Gregory does that.
Okay, give me a couple of guys. You know, you've gone through and you've done your draft seven rounds worth, Charlie. Give me a couple of guys that on Friday you'd sit back as you did your mock draft said, oh, intriguing, intriguing, and a couple guys on the third day that you sat back and said they fell here, but they're both intriguing.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think on day two, I'm hearing a lot of buzz around the league about T.J. Yeldon, the Alabama running back, and I know teams are rating him as the third-rated running back. But beyond him, I think there are some really excellent running backs in this draft. I think Tevin Coleman from Indiana and Amir Abdullah from Nebraska are going to be good pros. Duke Johnson from Miami, I think, is going to be a really nice weapon in the NFL. So I think there's some really good running backs that are going to go on the second day and into the third day. And as far as the third day goes, I think you're also going to see some nice linebackers. I think there's a few linebackers here that haven't gotten a lot of publicity in their day three picks, but to me they look like football players. They're the kind of guys that are just going to stick on their rosters and they're going to end up contributing and turning themselves into quality pros. And you have one there, and Mike Hull from Penn State. I think he's been underrated. I think he could turn into a good pro. Hayes Pollard from USC, Jake Ryan from Michigan, Martrell Spate from Arkansas, Hager from Baylor. I think there's a lot of linebackers on that third day of the draft that are just going to be guys that they're a little short on size and speed, but they're going to end up turning themselves into quality contributors. And Jordan Hicks from Texas, if he was healthy, he'd be a second-round pick, but he's had lots of injuries, but very talented. So for linebacker depth, day three looks really interesting to me.
Great stuff as always, Charlie. You know how much we enjoy it.
Thanks for having me back, Steve. Great talking with you.
CampbellWalterFootball.com. I sense that you're now in a state of depression.
No, I just I'll believe it when I see it. I still think the Steelers look in the secondary. He's not wrong. He's not wrong. They absolutely need a pass rusher. No question about that. There's not wrong there. I just think there's a couple of guys, including I think he's the kid from Wake Forest, that is a little bit higher up on the chart. And if he's not there, then I could see them going pass rusher.
They'll pick Johnson. That's who they'll pick. They'll pick Johnson at 22, the Wake Forest corner. Not great of build.
He's not overly tall.
Very good cover skills. Also, doesn't weigh a lot either. But he does have very good cover skills. The only thing about him I would be really, really concerned about is his ability on big receivers to get necessary leverage.
See, that's the one big question I have, especially if you're playing man-to-man.
And I am not I'm not enamored with the Gregory pick. And with, if that would be the pick, I would not be enamored. I didn't like him in Nebraska. By the way, and I talked about this the other day, the Kraft Hockeyville.
Yes.
I talked about that the other day.
I voted for it, yeah.
Johnstown made the final.
Right.
They're against what? I want to say Danville, Illinois. That sound right?
I'll tell you in just a minute. I knew Johnstown was in the final. I voted, obviously, for Johnstown because, you know, I thought that made sense. Let's see. Johnstown represents the East. Decatur, Illinois, the Decatur Civic Center.
Decatur, Illinois. It's already a palace. They don't need the $150,000. All right, vote for Johnstown. You got today and tomorrow to do it. Go, J-Town, go. Jack Ham's hometown, huge. This is big.
KraftHockeyville.com is the website.
You get to vote up to 150 times, you know. You get to vote up to 150 times.
See, that's wrong. I have principles. I vote once.
I've watched you kick a ball out from behind a tree. I don't want to hear about your principles. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The year was 1915. Thomas Edison was lighting up the countryside. Abigail Geisinger was starting a local hospital. Henry Ford was building the Model T. And J.O. Mertz founded the Sunbury Motor Company.
100 years later, Sunbury Motors has become the most established and recognizable Ford franchise in all of northeastern and central Pennsylvania. In 1915, Sunbury Motors had an inventory of around 10 vehicles. And today, there's over 500 to choose from. They had 2 employees then and almost 200 now. SMC continuously improves for you. Sunbury Motors has a complete service department with a separate diesel shop and quick lane for your convenience. A state-of-the-art body shop and frame and alignment shop, along with one of the largest Ford parts operations on the East Coast. In the past several years, Sunbury Motors has also added the full lineup of Lincoln and Hyundai vehicles. Everyone is welcome to become part of the SMC growing family. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. Thanks, J.O.
Lots of draft news. By the way, congratulations to Vaughn Walker. Because today he found out that he earned a scholarship at Penn State. And you want to talk about a guy? And how many times during the course of the last month did I sing the praises of Vaughn Walker in the spring? Vaughn Walker got himself a scholarship today. So congratulations to him. Deserves it. We had Dick and Milton on, and then Dick fell away, right?
Yeah, we just lost him there.
Well, that's. I think he's going to try and call back. But Vaughn Walker was put on scholarship by James Franklin today, just mere hours before James throws out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium tonight. which will be heavily scouted by the Phillies organization. And there's Dick. Hi, Dick. How are you today?
Hey, Steve. I knew you were doing football talk, and you know, I've been an Orioles fan since the 50s, so that's not, I'm not like a Johnny come lately with the Orioles. And I don't know how much
you've covered. Oh, I know you. You've talked about it. Yeah.
But I guess here's when actions have consequences, when they have a game tomorrow with no fans, none, and then they move the next three games back to Florida. And I don't realize how many of those people involved in that action over there might have family, friends, relatives that rely on the games at Camden Yards for their livelihood. Plus all the other businesses
in that area. I've talked about that actually repeatedly on the show, and that's how I opened up the show today, Dick, was talking about, I always find it laughable when I hear the arrogant, sports. Again, sports trumping up. No, it's a business.
It's a big business.
It's a huge business. Concessionaires, ushers, groundskeepers, parking lot attendants, those trying to sell food out on Utah Street. You know, beyond what the ball club has, of course, but the restaurants surrounding the area, some people coming out of town, this hotel space. There's a lot of areas that come into play that are dominoes in this that employ, in the end, a lot of people in those dominoes.
I'm kind of wondering if this will be the first time there's a major league sporting event played with no fans.
I'm trying to think, because Kevin's done a bunch.
The only thing I could think of was there was a broadcast of an NFL game. It was a Jets game where there were no announcers.
Jets Dolphins, but that had fans in it.
Right.
They broadcast the game with no announcers.
Yeah, they had no announcers.
Yeah, NBC did that, and they looked around and said, "This is stupid," and then that was the only time they did it. Look, networks come up with gimmicks. Okay, they aren't the brightest bulbs in the building, but you know, that's the way it is.
Well, that'll just be different tomorrow at Camden Yards. That's all I'm going to say and let it go.
It'll be completely different. It's the only time the White Sox come in. That's why they picked May 28th, an off day for both teams to play a doubleheader. So.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, let alone so story go, this is not a good situation. I don't know if it's going to end tonight, tomorrow, or next week, or next year, or whatever. But by and large, there's going to be a lot of tourists that are not going to flock to Inner Harbor anymore with the chances of having some kind of actions, riding the train, staying in the city, unless things change a lot.
There are two Baltimores, just like there are really two of every city.
Understand that.
And this happens in any city where, in order to entice people to come back into a city, they poured a lot of money to revitalize a section of it. And Baltimore is a perfect example of that. In the past 35 years, what they've done at Inner Harbor is incredible. With the restaurants, the aquarium, the hotels, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, now M&T Bank Stadium, and the hotels and the restaurants all through there that have become a real draw for people to come in from out of town to bring their conventions, and for people just to, hey, look, let's go for the night. Let's go to Inner Harbor. So many people told me, okay, we're going to Inner Harbor. This is going to be great, a lot of fun. And Baltimore has done a great job of making Inner Harbor a special place to go. But that's one Baltimore. The other Baltimore is, you know, the sections that we see of the city that have not been touched by this. Now, what we don't know, has the tentacles of Inner Harbor reached out into some of those neighborhoods, even in a small way, where some people are employed working at the hotels? I don't care whether they're working up front in maintenance, whatever it may be, or at the aquarium or at the ballpark. We don't know that. That's something we don't know, how much the employment in that area has reached out into other parts of the city. So that I can't answer. I just know the revitalization of Inner Harbor is different than the other parts of the city.
Yes, I understand that. Somebody on a major league event, maybe it was an NBA or somebody played their games at somebody else's park in the last few years or stadium.
The Mariners did. The Mariners had to go on the road for the final 2.5 months of the season when the piece of the ceiling at the King Dome came down.
What
other teams did was that because it ended up being added games to the, quote, home schedule, no season ticket holders were allowed in unless they bought tickets separately. They sold everything for a flat rate in all the other ballparks, and they donated the money to charity. That's how they ended up doing it.
Well, I'll let you go. This is not a good situation anyhow. However it goes, it shakes out in the end. It's still not a good situation.
And it's depressing
for a guy that's, this is the only team I root for in professional athletics. This is it. It's heartbreaking to see this city like this. I mean, I've spent a lot of time at Memorial Stadium, and I saw Johnny Unitas play his last football game in the NFL there. He played at San Diego after that, but I did see him play there. So I saw it myself. I've been there a lot. And I'll probably go back. It might not be this year.
Well, Dick, it's a great, great city. There's a lot of heart and character to the city. They have big problems that they need to overcome. But one thing I would not do is give up on it. I've got to be there at the end of October to do a football game down at M&T Bank Stadium. Hopefully there will be a healing within this city and that progress will come out of it so that many more people feel better about where they live and the situation they live in. Is that possible? I don't know. It's something I hope for, though.
Well, the only thing I'm going to let you go, along with the riots, the demonstrations, not just there, but St. Louis area, everywhere, is they anticipate sometimes things get a lot worse, especially in these cities in the July and August, because it's just so hot and people are out all night long anyhow. So that's what I'd be most worried about. I mean, Baltimore itself is... Once it gets pretty damn hot there, it's not, in the middle of the summer. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully get it all under control.
And your fear, by the way, is some that has been echoed by many across the country. Could this be a long, hot summer, not only weather-wise, but in the streets? Hopefully it won't be. I'm concerned about now.
Hopefully common sense could magnify this all over the country because everybody plays in a big city somewhere, All right, let you go. Thanks.
Dick, thank you. Bottom of the hour, time for a news update. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Final half hour of the show is coming up. Jennifer Wakeman, her usual outstanding job, is just moments away. And then Kevin being Kevin in the final half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin, excited for the draft now knowing that the Steelers might get Randy Gregory.
I just hope that...
Not a good corner.
I just hope that the NFL Network and or ESPN is able to follow along without having me on Twitter getting the pick before it actually gets broadcast. That was very annoying last year.
Don't go on Twitter.
Yeah, but it's also my job to be able to tweet things as things are happening with teams of interest to the program.
Then do it after it's picked.
It's much more complicated than you want to make it. You want to make this really simple, and it's not that simple. It's not like you can easily log on, tweet, get off, log in, tweet. It's not that easy for me. It's a little more complex than that.
Your voice gets awfully high when you whine.
It's my cold.
Yeah, you're cold. You going to be healthy enough to play golf next week? What are you going to do?
As far as I know, I'm okay.
Have you even gone out and played yet?
Yeah, I've done a lot of things outside this spring already.
You've played golf?
Oh, no, I didn't play golf, no.
Oh. Drew Kelly's in his car right now shaking his head. It was a simple question.
That's why they invent driving ranges, okay? I'll be fine.
You're going to a driving range?
Do you think that playing a round of golf is going to improve my game enough to make a difference? No.
We would like to see you give it a shot instead of having it be your first time out there.
It's tough during baseball season.
It's tough during baseball season.
Yeah, it's
you
been
play
two
every
game,
night?
It's been two game weeks, practice in between.
Wow. You know, there's 7 days in a week.
That's how I got this cold.
There's 7 days in a week, you know.
I'm aware. I need some for rest and recuperation.
Some for rest and recuperation?
Is recuperation a word? I just
yes,
made it,
it
if
is.
Not.
Oh. So you're just going to go out there and you're just going to give it a shot?
No, I'm probably going to go through the driving range for a little bit. Go that route.
The driving range?
Yeah, because you can do more than just hit a driver there, Steve.
I always start out at 7-iron, then I work my way to wedge.
Well, I usually pull out the driver because that's the worst club in my bag.
I don't hit driver until the last maybe 8 balls.
I usually pull the driver out for the first half of the bucket, and then I'll throw the irons in after that because the driver's the worst club in my bag.
But you're not going to even... You're not even going to try. You're not even going to try.
Hey, listen, as I recall, last year, the first shot off the number one tee was right down the middle.
We played 17 others after that.
I was only worried about the first one. Everyone after that, it was not a big deal.
Yeah, it was. We spent a lot of time looking. We don't have that kind of time. We got to keep moving.
Oh, boy.
1 year we're playing, and you got so mad at me.
Is that the year you were playing the Tony the Tiger ball?
Something like that. And we're looking for my ball in the rough somewhere. And he said, which one was it? I said, well, it's the same one I played all day. He goes, oh. Well, then finally I hit the thing into the pond on 16. Okay, on approach. You were all happy and jumping up and down. And everybody in the group just looked at you like you were insane. We needed that shot.
Didn't matter. I'd lost six balls that day. You finally lost Tony the Tiger. I got so sick of you lining that thing up with Tony's face.
You know where I got that? I played a round of golf at a charity tournament with the guys from Kellogg's. And they gave me K-Water and some other products, and they gave me a series of Tony the Tiger golf balls where you smack it right off of Tony's chops. You hated that golf ball.
I hated it. I was so happy to see that get wet. Hey, were you watching ESPN2 Saturday or Sunday night?
No.
You know where I'm going with this, don't you?
Yeah, but why do you want to pursue this? Because I think it's worthless.
Well, because I think we're looking at a change in the four-letter network or the family of networks where... Yeah, there's going to be sports on it, but I think they're leaning toward the E a little bit more as far as entertainment. They actually did an online, they actually broadcast an online video game contest with two colleges, a multiplayer online battle arena game. Now, a lot of these are huge views, obviously, online. This was the first one I can remember being on any network at all. I'm wondering, and this is my question, are we seeing an evolution of ESPN because of the fact that they're running out of stuff to broadcast, that they're opening the door to more the entertainment side. I mean, let's face it. They've done the hot dog eating contest for how many years? The spelling bee? And they got a lot of channels to cover. They have a lot of channels for programming.
Well, all I'll say is I noticed they do it during dead spots.
Well, let's face it. It was going up against the, what, the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, a Major League Baseball game. I mean, at that point, that's like going up against the Super Bowl. What do you program against the Super Bowl?
No, 30 for 30.
How many times can you run that?
Enough times to keep Bill Simmons happy and keep his mouth shut.
I mean, I'm not saying that this is a... See, a lot of people online were complaining that ESPN2 was carrying this video game contest. The thing is, it's not... It wasn't programmed for a sport. It's programmed on the entertainment side of what ESPN is doing. Now, we saw the WWE. We're now seeing video game contests being broadcast. I don't think it's something that needs to be on SportsCenter. But is ESPN starting to evolve a little bit?
It doesn't need to be on SportsCenter.
No.
Gee. Look, ESPN has done these things in the past. They ran movies for a while.
I remember that, yeah.
You notice how many movies are on now?
I don't know. I see it on MLB Network every now and then.
Yeah, but you don't see movies on ESPN anymore. That's done. The 4th of July thing, the Nathan's hot dog eating thing, these are just fads. That's all they are, fads. You know, the ESPN had been involved in the 50s and had been available in the 50s for people to watch, they would have done a hula hoop contest.
Well, and that may be. I mean, the streaming numbers for these things average 100 million viewers. And the Super Bowl was 1.3 million online. Now, granted, that was on broadcast television. I'm not comparing apples to apples here. But my question is ESPN so starved for programming that they're going more on the entertainment side now with some of their channels?
No, because they have certain cycles that they go through. They have college football on all the time from the end of August all the way to the end of the season. They have their NFL Monday Night Football package. They have contracts with every conference when it comes to college basketball. Between the beginning of August and probably the end of March, they're loaded to the max with a wide variety, especially on the college side. What's not helped them is that they've looked around and said, you know what, especially with the SEC network, a lot of their college baseball stuff is farmed over to the SEC network now. That's where they have. I think the SEC network is a big reason why, because they've farmed out sports over there that they used to cover. That's where the holes have been created, because they have the SEC network and they control that. So college baseball, college softball, things like that. When you get to June, you'll have the College World Series on. When you get to June, you'll have the softball series on. July will be sort of dead month, except for their Major League Baseball stuff. Then they'll get into NFL training camp. Are they going to put this on SportsCenter? No, it's not sports. The WWE thing was, to me, a huge mistake.
I agree.
Like this, I mean, this week, they're, in terms of being on SportsCenter.
Right.
If they were to carry the WWE on ESPN, that'd be fine as programming. I have no problem with that as programming. Just like this, I don't care if it's programming. But it's not sports news. It's not sports news. Any time that the winner is predetermined in the locker room, okay, that's not sports.
I am totally 100% in agreement with you on all that.
Okay. Now, if they carried it, that's fine. To me, it's like, to me, carrying the WWE on ESPN is the equivalent of carrying the spelling bee, the equivalent of carrying esports, the equivalent of Australian rules football, you know, whatever. It's a part of the programming. That's fine. And WWE gets great ratings on cable. It's a program, but it's not a program that has sports news attached to it. I mean, Pacquiao Mayweather, they're spending all week on that, which to me,
But I just laughed that there were all these fans up in arms about what was on Sunday night on ESPN2. If this was on SportsCenter, I could understand that argument, but it's programming.
Well, that's all it is programming, and anybody gets up in arms with a TV network carries needs to get out and play more golf. We'll come back with more in a moment. Instead of just going to the driving range here on ESPN, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We want to see you in Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia. It's the great tent event this weekend only.
Oh, I'm excited. Should I bring my sleeping bag and maybe some marshmallows?
Not that kind of tent. We're slashing prices on all vehicles.
Now, why would I get a better deal under a tent than at the dealership?
Because tents are...
No, stop. Why not just go down to Sunbury Motors Kia any day of the week and get great prices on a new Kia? In fact, I see they have 0% financing for up to 66 months on all 2015 Optimas and Fortes.
But we'll have balloons at the tent event.
That's okay. I'd rather go see the local guys at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and get a new car with a fantastic 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Or I'll check them out online at sunburymotors.com.
KMF financing to all qualified customers.
I thought you liked
actually,
that one.
You know what? Everybody thought that was going to happen, and it never did. Okay. Want to have some fun here for a second?
All right.
This is going to be courtesy of GoPSUSports.com. Okay? Courtesy of GoPSUSports.com. All right? James Franklin, his football team meeting.
Somebody that I love. And I love all you guys, but this guy to me is an example of everything we do around here. I want to publicly acknowledge him. Blue collar, hard nose, works his ass off, always has positive energy at practice, is unbelievable at practice, has improved as much as anybody. And I want to make an announcement right now because I'm not giving him shit. And he's getting a full scholarship, and that's Von Walker.
How about that, huh? He deserves it. I'll tell you right now, he busted his backside the entire time, all spring. You watch everything he's done. He came here as a running back, right? As a running back, he came here. Walked on. Okay? Walked on. Moved him to safety. I think a lot of people didn't really saw when he was at safety. But then last year, they moved him to outside linebacker. I'll tell you, he had a great spring. Great spring. I'm thrilled for him. He deserves it. Pacquiao and Mayweather. I know you're not going to spend a dime.
No way.
You're not spending a dime. So I understand that part.
We did get a call today, though. Somebody was looking to see if anybody was, any of the, local establishments are doing it. I didn't know of any.
That I don't know. All I know is that my gut tells me this is going to be an incredibly boring fight. Mayweather is a brilliant defensive fighter, but it's always been defense, okay, pick your shots, whatever. If Mayweather fought in the Hagler-Leonard Hearns era, he'd have been eaten alive. Have you ever watched Mayweather fight?
I haven't seen it in years. I saw him early.
He's 47-0, and it doesn't light me up. He's not exciting to watch. Same thing with Pat. I mean, these guys are both 5 years past when they should have fought. 5 years. 5 years takes its toll. They're both 5 years past where they should be. 5 years. And I do not in any way, shape, or form think that there's really any excitement to this fight at all. None. I mean, Pacquiao hasn't knocked out a guy in 6 years. Mayweather hasn't knocked out a guy in 4 years. And on top of that, you look at Mayweather's resume to get to 47-0. It's the bum of the month club.